is. Brayden, get in there.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 236 of MMT Millennial Movie Talk. It's a movie, TV show, and wrestling podcast, and I'm one of your hosts, Brayden, joined, as always, by the wonderful Alex.
Woo!
The wonderful Michael.
Hello, I'm not joining in whatever he's doing.
And the wonderful Christian.
I can go.
Love it. We're coming in hot off four fresh movie trailer reaction videos. So
it's what we do for you fucking nerds.
If the good opening there. Thank you very much.
Always a nice love
boy. We respect the very few people who hang out with us for this show. But how we all been? It's been some time since
it's been
we last. One it's week been since 2 weeks.
It's been 2 weeks since we did the show.
Yes, because Alex and I had a very important date when we recorded.
The very important.
We would normally record so MMT, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But I feel like we need to prepare ourselves mentally and emotionally and spiritually.
No,
for
I
that.
Think you should just get straight into it.
Really?
I really want to hear about it. I really want to hear about it.
So Brayden and I will like we'll record a review after the thing, and I drove home and I went, I'm not fucking doing a review. I'm going to bed.
I got home and checked my phone, and Alex had just said, I'm going to bed.
No, he was done then already.
And then, but we'll just like to each other. We're like, we'll write down some notes, and so that we still got some shit, and then we'll do it next week. Then I proceeded just not to write down notes.
I also
have a single note.
I feel like I wrote down like one thing and then I completely forgot to write anything else.
I wrote a Letterboxd review that got 23 likes.
Fuck yeah, nice.
Bit of a hero.
Mine got nothing.
Yeah, that's what happens.
Would you like a pity like? I can do that for you.
Don't
if you
do
like.
It. You haven't even liked mine, mate. Can you go just bump up mine?
Yeah.
Sorry, I got 3 likes.
There you
and
go.
And I did like Alex's.
Yeah.
We got sent, thanks to the fine folks over at Sony, we got sent to go see the advanced screening.
Thanks, Sony.
Pre-embargo of reviews of Madam Web.
Yeah, so it was embargoed like the second before it came out.
Yeah.
We know why now.
Yeah, we very much know why. If you've been following along from the ride of this film existing, the trailer came out. People watched it. Not a lot of people watched it, but people watched it, myself included. And I looked at it and I said, what the fuck is this? This is somehow a Spider-Verse, Spider-Man adjacent film. It is it's a bad 2000s thriller. With about 2% injection of Sony's superhero movies.
I didn't realize after the trailer it was a spider, like any way related to Spider-Man in any way, shape, or form.
Webb is in the title.
Thank God. Thank God they didn't actually keep the line in the film from the trailer.
He
was with my mom in the Amazon, when she died studying spiders or whatever the fuck.
When she was studying spiders right before she died.
Man, the script of this film.
You just saying that line out loud just gave me the same vibe as, this is Katana.
Yeah,
you delivered it in the exact same way.
I'm pretty sure the line from the trailer was, he was in the Amazon with my mother while she was studying spiders right before she died.
Yep.
A lot of information in that one sentence.
Yeah. Heavy lifting in that very poorly written sentence.
This movie is really, really bad, but it's really funny.
It is funny. Like, there were so many times when we were in the cinema sitting there.
I just want to say I was not bored in this movie.
Because you're constantly wondering what the fuck is going to happen next because...
Nothing happens.
Nothing's happening.
So...
Oh, man.
Sydney Sweeney's in the movie, and we know this because the marketing towards the last 3 months has solely revolved around Sydney Sweeney being in this movie.
Yeah.
And she's in it for a bit, and she plays a character that's eventually going to be a spider person, and that's her character.
Yep.
Her
character is teenager who exists.
Teenager who exists and is a little shy.
Yeah.
Then there's teenager who is angry at the world, and then there is other teenager who's also angry at the world. We got two of them.
Yeah.
Because one's not enough.
But one's like a hard street kid, and the other one's bookish.
Yeah.
And and their whole existence is to be teenage girls in 2003,
dance on tables,
and maybe one day they become Spider Women.
Maybe. Yeah, and then there's
a villain. That's not what you get in this film.
There's a villain in the movie.
Is there, Alex? Was there?
Yeah, and he spends the whole time in the film talking to a lady.
Oh, man, this poor woman.
In a chair who's got a lot of computers in front of her.
Oh, my God.
I don't believe a single one of his live takes was used in the film. I think everything he said was completely dubbed over in ADR.
Yep.
Extremely bad ADR. Most of the time he talks, what he's saying is not matching his lips.
It was the one really noticeable one.
Yeah. It's just like they gave up on the film, and it was very funny. His plan in the film is that he had visions of these three spider girls murdering him in the future. So now he's trying to get to them before they become spider girls.
Yep.
And he's going to kill them.
That's everything. That's everything you learn about him.
And he got this rare spider from the Amazon with Dakota Johnson's mum while she was studying spiders right before she died. And now we never find out what he did with the spider. We just find out he went from being a poor man in the Amazon with Dakota Johnson's mum, who died right before while she was studying spiders. And so he gets a spider, and then he goes back to the US, and suddenly cuts forward and he's now very rich.
He's like mega rich.
And he's got a spider in the cabinet, and we never find out what he did with the spider that made him super rich or what he does anything about him.
Like, these super spiders just live for years, hey? Like,
and we just know that he wants to kill Dakota Johnson.
No, he doesn't even know Dakota Johnson exists. Sorry.
So my biggest thing I hate about this film is that Dakota Johnson, what's her character's name in the film? Something Webb.
Sandra Webb.
Cassandra Webb. And the movie's called Madam Webb. And what really pisses me off is that Cassandra Webb is spelled W-E-B-B, and then the movie title Madam Webb is spelled W-E-B.
Yep.
And I would have really liked it if it was just change it, just take the B off her last name and we're still fine.
Okay, Alex, now you're getting into problems with comic books from like the 80s.
They're dumb. It really pissed me off.
They are dumb.
He doesn't care where it came from. He thinks it's dumb.
It is dumb.
What's his name from Parks and Rec? Adam Scott. We love Adam Scott.
Yep. You guys aren't ready for this.
Adam Scott plays Uncle Ben in the film. And then Emma Roberts.
Emma Roberts.
Plays, what's her name?
It plays Peter Parker's mum.
And she's pregnant with Peter Parker throughout the whole film.
But they don't name drop it.
They never name drop
Peter Parker. Like, is the most that Sony possibly holds back in this film.
There's a really dumb joke towards the end where Adam Scott's character, Ben Parker, goes, "I'm glad I'm not a dad or anything." And then Madam Webb just goes, because she's a clairvoyant, she can see the future, goes, "Boy, little does he know," because obviously his sister's going to horrifically die and he's going to take custody of...
which is a pretty wild way to... Like, because this entire film is about her seeing the future, seeing people die and changing the future. And she's just looked into the future and gone, "I'm going to let this woman die." And, is this meant to be a world where we get Peter Parker growing up to be Spider-Man, or is this a completely separate world? About,
this movie's sponsored by Pepsi, by the way.
Oh, this movie. This
movie's got
lots of Pepsi.
This movie's got, it's
Pepsi Cola everywhere.
It's as bad as CM Punk being sponsored by Pepsi, because CM Punk's got a Pepsi logo tattooed on his shoulder for no reason. Yeah. The third act of the film takes place on a crumbly Pepsi, like a crumbling, destroyed Pepsi. What is it? Neon?
Like a big neon billboard sign.
Neon billboard sign.
Interesting.
In the most cartoon fireworks factory you've ever seen.
There's a scene where she crashes an ambulance through a second story car park and
can just drive it off with
no issue. Oh, but then she grabs a bag from the ambulance.
Oh my God.
She grabs this like supply bag from the ambo, right? And she runs out.
You know, with like bandages and shit in it.
Yeah. And then 3 minutes later, she pulls out 6 flares from this ambulance bag and a smoke grenade. And
yep,
it's fucking hysterical.
And that was so funny. I think that's the hardest I laughed in the movie was when she pulled out a smoke grenade from an ambo bag.
Yeah. There is one sequence this film actually gets laughs, and it's because Dakota Johnson is actually very good at being like sarcastic and like against everything. There's a baby shower scene where Dakota Johnson actually gets to be likable in this film because
she's not likable at all.
She's being forced into this baby shower sequence that she doesn't want to be in. And then when forced in this situation, she's like, oh yeah, my mom died in childbirth. Like I don't have a family. And it's really awkward. And it's like, okay, this is funny. And it's the only time anything is funny in this film.
My favorite is a scene where she gets home.
Her marketing for this unhinged, like all the her press stuff for it.
She doesn't care.
Bagging
it's so
like
funny.
Everybody.
She's like, they asked her to name Tom Holland's 3 Spider-Man films and she couldn't do it. She was just like,
incredible.
Spider-Man, there he is. Spider-Man, he's back. And Spider-Man and the Goblet of Spiders.
Not that
and,
far from the truth.
Yeah,
really.
So she's kind of funny. Like, she clearly just, apparently she was told this was an MCU movie. And then she, because as soon as she found out it wasn't an MCU movie, she actually changed casting agencies.
Wow.
You can see.
Oh.
So yeah, she clearly doesn't want to like in any of the post-production shit. She clearly doesn't want to be there. Yeah. And she still claims she has not seen the movie. So
good for her, honestly.
Yeah, good for her.
I'm happy. It was very funny.
I mean, there are parts of this film where it's like it's trying for things. Like when it's doing the sequences of like her like future clairvoyance shit and this like kind of astral projection-y type shit, it's
awful.
It's so bad, but it's at least trying for something. The rest of the film is just made so badly.
The big thing at the end of the where she like finally realizes her power and unlocks them is she astral projects.
Oh my God, it's really bad.
3 versions of herself to go help the girls. And 2 of the girls don't need her help. She just gives them encouragement.
Yeah.
She just goes,
come
you
on,
can
guys.
Do it. She astro projects herself next to the girl being like, you can do it. Then one of them, she actually helps up. Then the other one, she's like, run.
Yeah.
And there's a scene where she gets home and goes to her apartment after a day of work, lets a stray cat in, and then just sits there for a second, watches the cat drink milk. And in the longest pause, she just goes, Australia's got to stick together.
Oh my God. So she is unhinged in this film. There are so many times when the script calls upon her to just like, they didn't want to like record it afterwards and have it be like a voiceover of like her thinking in her head or anything. She out loud, audibly talks to herself like a video game character and it's embarrassing. It's really bad. The script is shocking.
That's pretty much all Great I've movie. Heard from it. Like, from anything I've seen, everyone's just like, the script is...
Oh.
Needs to be studied.
Yeah, honestly, I kind of want to look at it just to be like, what is up with this?
What are the what are like the context clues that they're giving characters and stuff? Very, very, very interesting.
There is nothing. There is nothing.
It's character development.
Okay, so you know how beforehand before seeing this film, I was commenting saying, how are you having a film with 4 spider women and making it look like shit? And it turns out it is because there is not 4 spider women in this film. There is 30 seconds of 3 spider women in this film and about a minute of Madam Web being kind of Madam Web. And that's it. I heard it described really well on, I was listening to something recently and they were talking about how, it was a comic podcast and they were talking about Madam Web, and one of them said they liked it, and I immediately disregarded their opinion. And then the others I was listening to more thoroughly, and they were talking about how all of the different studios have their, like, feel. Like, you know, your Marvel stuff is very, you know, grounded comedy, action, adventure. And then you get your DC films where they're like, you know, gods among men, like the scale is a completely different realm. And then you get Sony, who are out here making C-list horror films with a PG rating and trying to connect it to some Spider-Man characters. And that's it. So that's Madam
Web. Movie sucks.
Yeah, it's not good.
Well done, gave it a one. I gave it a 1 out of 5.
Yikes.
I think I gave it a 2 out of 5, and I would rather watch this than Morbius again. Given the option between the two.
I've heard this is worse than Morbius. So.
I've seen a lot of people saying that it was worse than Morbius, and I don't quite fall in that camp, but if Alex, if you want to torture yourself and you want to watch Morbius, be my guest.
It sounds like I got to watch me some Morbius.
It's Morbin time, baby.
It's Morbin time, it's yeah. You beat me to it.
I'm sorry.
That's fine.
Sorry, Chris. But it was the lag. It was the lag. I'm sorry, Chris.
It's okay. You know, it's what I'm known for here, but that's fine.
True. What is Morbius?
Dropping
Morbius.
It's Morbin times.
Number one Morbius fan over here.
Fire fans tune in.
Bless. All right, let's share the talking around for a bit, because that was definitely Alex and I getting a bit of a vent going on. So let's check in with Michael and Chris. What have you guys been watching?
I got nothing.
You got nothing?
It's really hot out here, guys.
Well, I mentioned to you already, I've been watching a bit of Clarkson's Farm.
Clarkson's Farm?
And I've been loving
it. That's Michael's show.
It's Michael's show. Now our show. But now I've seen it. We can all watch it. It's on Amazon Prime.
Yuck.
I can't. I got rid of Amazon Prime.
Oh, that's sad.
Good.
Wait, who's Amazon Prime am I using? Oh, we love Clarkson's Farm. You know, I'm a big Top Gear, big Grand Tour fan, and he's a different man when he's just out plowing his fields.
Isn't he?
He has this great moment in the, I think it's the start of season 2, where he's just like, you know, this started as, you know, a bit of a passion project, and he's, you know, he's getting up at 5 a.m. and he's plowing fields, he's drilling seeds. You get to learn a lot of farming terms. And he's just like, this is the happiest I've ever been. And like all these years of cars and all the, you know, bullshit TV and everything behind him, he's like, he's absolutely wholesome. Just happy that he's getting up at 6 a.m. to sow seeds.
In season one, he gets sheep because he thinks it'll be, they'll make him money, and he wants sheep so he doesn't have to worry about mowing the grass and
he whatever else. That sheep
and he like genuinely falls in love
decision.
With it, and then you see like when he sells some of them off to become roasts, you see like the utter like heartbreak in him. Like there's a couple that he gets and they can't like give birth for some reason, so that they like the best thing to do is get rid of them, and he like takes them to the abattoir and like he's like, oh, I'll just like, go say goodbye to them before I leave. And by the time he gets back out of the office, they're already gone. And the utter like heartbreak in his eyes.
Oh.
It's like midway through season one. Just like, oh, I'll just go say goodbye. And the poor guy at the slaughtering place is just like, they think they're already gone.
But it's like a different light, because obviously he's catchphrase across Top Gear and Grand Tour is speed and power and all this stuff. And I mean, there's a little bit of that injected into this. Like he goes and buys a big fuck off tractor when he doesn't need it.
Yeah,
like
the massive tractor
stuff.
That but everyone like, sees and says it's too big, but he's impressed by it and he keeps calling it the Lamborghini of tractors.
It is a Lamborghini, to be fair.
I was going to say, don't Lamborghini make tractors?
They do, and that's what he gets.
He builds up this kind of network of characters and farm people that he always ends up hiring because he can't do half the shit he needs to do on the farm. And it's so wholesome. It's just not the kind of people you'd think Jeremy Clarkson is hanging out with in his spare time.
But they're all great behind like his little antics and all the fun of like him learning farm stuff. It really like draws attention to like the hardship. I mean, like
the struggle.
It's very obviously it's very tailored towards British farmers and stuff, but like obviously they had when they filmed like the first season was 2020. So like, you know, they had Brexit and stuff. So like, he's just listing down like all the things that they can't like sell at good prices anymore because they can't export it out. And then
and they're just being beaten by the EU in like every category, because the EU has these great benefits and schemes to help farmers. And then when Brexit happened, like they even show footage of the government making promises like, oh yeah, like we're going to, any support that the EU gave, we're going to give to British farmers. We're going to give it. Cut to him interviewing some British farmers that are just like, haven't got any of that. They just said it.
Yeah.
They just said it. That was it. And there's this huge struggle, a lot of attention brought to it where like, obviously he's like the farm has an income, but it's more of a like a hobby farm, obviously.
Mm.
And like
he doesn't need to make money. He's a millionaire. On that farm.
Yeah. Jeremy Clarkson can just spend 30 grand on a tractor and then spend 30 grand on a seed like driller and then crash it into a post like because he's an idiot and he can't drive, which is the best little like reoccurring joke is that he just crashes everything and he can't drive the shit.
He can't drive a tractor for somebody who's driven all his life.
Yeah. But it's just, and he always raises the point like, what the hell are the farmers doing? Because he'll just be like, oh, I need to get this done. And then his like advisor will be like, oh yeah, that's going to cost like 200 grand. And he's just like, what? Like,
yeah.
If you're an actual small-time farmer trying to compete with the factory, the evil factory farms, there's just no chance.
He doesn't like flaunt around like the money. It's not like, you know, when they're just like, oh, this will cost 30 grand. He's like, oh, that's cool. I'll just do it. Like he genuinely is just like tries to like go buy just the farm and stuff like.
Yeah, and we get into season two.
But like it's a big point he makes at the end of the first season. Like they add it all up or something, and he makes like £100 profit
or something.
Off of the it's whole not even £100.
Yeah, it's wow. like it's like
it's, some, it's like some ridiculously like small number for the after all the subsidies and selling everything and like all this shit. And he's just like, if I didn't have like, didn't host Who Wants to Be a Millionaire and have Top Gear and all this shit, like I couldn't survive. And it's just like. It's not like he's trying to show off his money. He does actually push the point of like, there are people struggling.
And we get into season two and we get some cows in. And obviously like he's raising the cows and having them like calve and, you know, they're all having babies. And it's like this really wholesome like moment, like seeing the birth of all these calves and like he's really attached to them. And he's also like by season two, he kind of learnt the lingo. He more knows what he's talking about, and it's just wholesome to see. Like he's really generally into the farming. Like he's getting it. And obviously, like these cows though, he's raising them for meat. But like, there's a difference between his cows, which are like taken care of. Then they're not like shoved into like pens. They're in like fields, you know, compared to like factory farming where it's like wrong. And yeah, when he's sending one or two of the cows off to slaughter, it doesn't feel like the worst thing ever. Like he has genuinely loved these cows. They've been outside, they've been happy, like they've led good lives compared to the meat industry, which a lot of us do not agree with. And at the same time, he's showing that this is almost impossible to turn a profit on. And if he wasn't doing it as a hobby, it almost couldn't be done. And then in season two, they get into a lot of the more, the kind of council red tape, where he's kind of being targeted out by his local community because of who he is and they don't want him to be a farmer, but also like showing that the real other farmers trying to turn a profit, they just can't do it. And this lifestyle where we are raising these cows properly and, you know, they're not overcrowded and they're not diseased and they're not shoved into tiny pens, spend their whole life and stuff. And it can't be done for profit. They're getting beaten by, again, massive factory farming. And that's very sad.
Yeah. But, he tries to like,
yeah.
He tries to, because obviously like he then starts, season two, you talk to more of the farmers in like, you see more farmers in the area and there's like one of the dairy farmers in the area. And like, I think the everyone that's shown on there is obviously farming the way it should, like you should and stuff.
Yeah.
These
are like, local, like British farmers. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a tuberculosis outbreak going across the cows, I think it is.
Yeah.
And she's just like, yeah, I've had to like had to like put down because they've had the disease and you don't want it to spread. A lot of her, the cows, and she's just like, if it wasn't for like the farm shop he runs,
I think it's half probably, their herd. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Like
half their herd due to TB, and every time it happens, they have to completely shut down their farm and they can't produce anything. And then, yeah. Because what his whole thing in season two is trying to create a restaurant that only sells what him and the like literally neighboring farms make, which he ends up succeeding in, and it's pretty cool, despite the council trying to stop him at every turn. And yeah, these farmers are saying like, we've lost half our herd, like we don't take a wage, like, and these are the farmers that are working 12-hour days, you know, there's no weekend, and they don't even take a wage, like they're living on scraps, and just any penny they make goes straight back into their farm, which is continuing to lose money. And the government's not giving them support. They're getting outpriced by even, you know, farmers doing it the right way in the EU because they have all the support. And it's, yeah, it's a sad story. It's a sad, sad story.
A sad, enjoyable show.
But a very enjoyable show.
We're getting season three soon.
Yeah, very excited. Oh, very excited. Yeah. He's a farmer now. He's a farmer. There's a great scene. He goes to like the farming store and he's like, this is my favorite place in the world, because he actually knows what
he walks just around and is like looking at clothes and everything, and he's just like, I love it here.
Yeah. Oh my god. He's a transformed man. Like I saw some Top Gear and I was like, he's unrecognizable.
This is completely different.
He's just farming.
The other week,
he's getting up at 5 a.m. and doing full fields with the tractor. Like, this is Jeremy Clarkson. Like, he never has to work again a day in his life. And him and his partner, Lisa, who's like this hilarious Irish woman, great accent, they're getting up at like 6 a.m. to wrangle to find his cows because they keep escaping. And he just mentions that the like early morning cow like hustle, like bring, like it has become like his favorite way to start the morning, even though it's like a chore. God. Like, because it's just this beautiful frosty field, and they're just out like, come on, gal. Come on, gal.
Oh, that's come awesome.
On. Yeah.
It's a great show. I find myself watching it like every 6 months just because it's a good watch. It's an easy watch. It's a good watch.
Very interesting, great characters. Yeah. Because it's not TV characters other than him. It's literally just the people he employs, and their little countryisms are hilarious. We've got there's like a 20-year-old named Caleb who does a lot of his work around the farm, who has never left literally their area. There's an episode where they make him drive to London and he's so out of his depth, like he's never left the country. He's like, there's so many things he's never done. And Jeremy Clarkson, it's like another running joke, is that he just double takes, like, what, you've never seen James Bond? He's like, no. like just things like that.
Very sheltered little life.
Exactly. Yeah, I can't recommend it enough.
I'm surprised Alex didn't jump in there on Michael saying that he rewatches Clarkson's Farm. Surprised Alex didn't jump in with a little Breaking Bad joke or anything. But
Michael should know. He should have
seen Breaking Bad. I do know. It sits in the back of my mind constantly.
I've rewatched that and Better Call Saul like 3 times each in the since you should have watched it, probably.
Oh, yeah. Don't worry. I know. You're not the only people to shun me for my actions.
Yeah, you are a piece of shit, aren't you?
Yeah, just a little bit.
I watched some Amazon films. One is Lamborghini.
You were saying before you were on a car trip.
I was. Somehow we've gone. We watched Ferrari a few weeks ago, which was fine. Comparing that to Lamborghini, you could tell Ferrari's a much better made film, right? We got better production value, better. It's just generally better shot, better filmed, better script. But Lamborghini is about a much more interesting time in the kind of Lamborghini story. Because we had the Ferrari movie where it was more about his family, like after he's kind of already created Ferrari, where we thought, well, maybe we're getting like more of an origin story. But the Lamborghini, the Lamborghini film is an origin story. And that part of it is much more interesting. Seeing, you know, he started making tractors, then he moved into sports cars, and he has this rivalry with Enzo, which is cool. But it's a bit. It's not the best movie. I think I gave it 2.5. It was fun.
The definition of mid.
Yes, it was mid. It was interesting because you can get that documentary biography aspect from it, like of, oh, he started, like, this is how Lamborghini began. But that was fine. Having watched that, rewatched Ford vs. Ferrari, which is
great movie.
Excellent. 4 out of 5. Still.
That's cinema.
We love it. What else did we watch?
You watched Gran Turismo.
We watched Gran Turismo.
Oh, did you watch, what did you think?
That's what began this, actually. We watched Gran Turismo first, and then that fed into Lamborghini, like, automatically, thanks to Amazon. Gran Turismo.
I still have not seen the ending.
Gran Turismo.
You don't need to see the ending.
Weird film.
It is weird, isn't it? It's strange.
The whole gamer side of it is so off. Like, the movie's about... It's, you know, it's meant to be, like, about serious, you know, gamers. But the language and the behind it is just so off. Like, we have the, I think one, but the old, when he gets into a real race car, one of the pit crew goes like, good job, noob. Like, yeah. It's like, oh, that's like, that's a gamer word. That's a gamer word.
And you know
what?
Like, that would have worked if they had actually set it when it was, like... Because it was done in the, like, early 2010s, I think.
Yeah.
Or, like, even the late 2000s was when they were actually doing this. And for some reason, they decided to, like, modernize it and update it and make it be set now.
Yeah.
With, like, recent Gran Turismo, which feels
because
like
it's
an
the
ad.
Most accessible now.
No, yeah. But it makes it feel like an ad. But also, there is no new Gran Turismo game, like... It's a very weird decision.
Very strange.
We're going to modernize it, but also not release a game alongside it or anything. They didn't want to set it back then. It's very weird.
I think the best part of this movie was the character played by the guy Hopper from Stranger Things.
David Harper.
He's the best character in the film. He's good.
Yeah.
He's written well.
Strict asshole guy who's actually a big lovable dad.
Starts to care. Yep. We really liked him.
He plays it so well.
The random little gamer CGI was a big problem I had. Because we've got when, first of all, we got our man who, he's a real driver. He's playing the racing sims. But we don't see him playing the serious racing sims. All right. See, like, people will play these racing sims and these people that, you know, became real drivers. They will be doing what real drivers do. Real drivers use racing sims to learn tracks and stuff. Like, they will be sitting there methodically driving these tracks hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times and learning the tracks and then racing and having fun in the simulator, right? But what the only gameplay we're kind of shown is, like, the most arcadey, like, he's having a Need for Speed race, like, second place, first place, second place. Not, like... what I'm sure he was doing in real life, which was actually learning the tracks and methodically, boringly racing for hours and hours and hours on his sims.
And even they know that's boring even in a montage.
Yeah.
So they're just like, throw it away with dialogue and they're like, he's like, I've raced this track hundreds of times. I know
it. We didn't
it.
See that. We just saw arcadey races with people online, sure. Like where we're, you know. And then when we're watching him play The Sims, he's playing with, like, all the assists on. He's got the racing line. He's got the numbers. It's like, if this guy was a serious sim racer, you know, like, the skills that would translate to real life, like I'm saying, even knowing the tracks and the braking points and everything, like, these are real things you can learn.
But then, Chris, he wouldn't be able to have that moment where he's like, but I know the better line.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And he goes for the move.
So I thought the entire point of the film being that his racing sim skills translated to real life, and then what that we're shown of that is just a joke. Like, he might as well be playing Mario Kart. Like,
oh my god, someone should intercut that.
Cut with the shell, cut the random box like coming up. And
I haven't seen the end of the film. I've seen a lot of the film, but I haven't seen the end of the movie. Does he win the race?
He wins the race. Yeah, he wins the race. He wins Le Mans.
He wins
cool.
the race. He wins Le Mans, but, which he never did in real life.
Wait, does he actually win Le Mans?
Yeah.
Oh, he didn't do that in real life? I would have thought it might have been in the news if a gamer won Le Mans. But, okay.
He wins Le Mans in the film?
Yeah.
He wins Le Mans.
End to the movie.
That
and
does.
Do you know the context?
It's just
of like
Ford versus Ferrari.
There.
It's just like Ford versus Ferrari.
Man.
He wins Le Mans?
Yep.
He does.
Yep.
okay.
Look, yeah,
I'm gonna watch it.
The random
it becomes a rags to riches underdog story against the wealthy expensive the wealthy asshole kid. Guy.
Who What's the other name? Problem I had was these little on. The battles he's having with the wealthy guy who is just actively crashing into him and running him off the racetrack. Like, that's like not allowed. This yeah, is, that guy, once again, when Mario, it's Mario Kart.
This guy would be arrested.
Yeah. Like, so like he purposely crashes into him in a proper like regulated race. That would be a foul. He would, if he was doing it on purpose, he would likely not
Which
be allowed
he did multiple
to race.
Times,
yeah. Yeah.
So
he's like going out there and doing
it. For it.
And he crashes into the other guy and everyone's mad at the other guy. Like, you crashed. It's like, well, I was clearly run into by another driver on purpose.
Yeah.
Like, no. And then the other thing that really annoyed me is once we're in the real cars, we keep going back to the video game. But again, it's the arcadey stuff from the video game. So, like, he's in the real life car racing and his head's not in the game. He's losing. So he starts to imagine that he's just playing the video game. And it's not like...
Then he starts winning.
It's not like imagining that he's methodically in his room driving. It's like the racing line comes up. All the hate HUD comes up. He's seeing the numbers on top of the cars, which again, I'm sure a serious sim player wouldn't have the Mario Kart
it's
first, second,
very
three.
Very funny though.
It is hilarious.
Like, how do we show people it's a video game thing?
Which is where we come full circle. The gamer stuff is just all wrong and cringe. It's like, oh, he's a gamer, so he's seeing the numbers above all the cars. It's like, we're racing now. Why are we're not going back to the gaming. He's evolved so far beyond The Sims, if this is the true story. Like, he's not, like, wishing he was back in his room.
He came third in Le Mans.
Okay, I mean, that's impressive.
I would have preferred if the film ended like that.
But again, the movie did not show... The movie did not show sim skills translating to real life. It showed a Mario Kart player.
What's LMP2? Because he was, is that like category two?
Or
like,
I don't know.
I'm not too sure. I don't know.
He wasn't in the first category of Le Mans. He was like in the second.
Oh, okay. Second tier.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure there's different races or whatever.
Yeah.
But
yeah, so yeah, I think I gave it a 2 out of 5.
Wild.
And one of those stars is just for Hopper.
Go treat yourself to another car film. It's the hit film, Cars.
Cars we love.
Just go watch Cars.
I'll go watch Cars. Mate, all our friends are there.
Yeah, that's it.
Never let you down.
Before we get into Alex's more serious watches of things
Chris is about to keep talking.
I have one more joke watch.
Oh, you have one more?
Honourable mention, the infamous mention is... For some reason, I've started the Maze Runner trilogy, which last time I tried to watch,
a strong word.
I think I stopped halfway through the second film the last time I tried to watch. The first Maze Runner film is so awful.
And that's the best one.
And that's the best one. I'm sure I'm going to find out.
But Chris, you're going to watch The Scorch.
He comes out of... He's put into this world where he's confused. He doesn't know anything. And no one will just say anything. It's just like the plot. We need to move the plot forward and it's meant to be mysterious. But there's no reason that the people wouldn't just explain to him what's going on. Like, they don't even explain to him that there's a maze outside the door. And he's just constantly looking over like, what's out there? And everyone's like, shut up. Don't talk about it.
You think someone comes up that elevator and they're like, all right, we've got a half hour long monologue that we've prepared. It's going to explain everything.
Yeah,
we have an information package.
Here's your
dossier. Here's your gift bag.
Clearly not for clearly just for the movie. The way the movie's got to run, no one will say anything or explain anything, and there's no reason for it. And they just keep like they should be dumping info, and they just don't say anything. And he's just looking confused.
Yeah.
And the only other thing is,
how will they be edgy? Otherwise.
Yeah, there I have a problem with, because this place they've lived in, they've built some structures, and I have a problem with some of these structures, because there's the woods, which is apparently huge because they're like, it's deep in the woods, even though it's in this their closed in area.
Yeah.
And they've got a little building in the woods where their maze map is kept. This structure makes no sense. All right, it's just sticks, and there's complete holes in the sticks, so it would offer no insulation. It doesn't offer any secrecy because you can see straight through the sides. The roof doesn't. It doesn't look watertight. Doesn't look windtight. I'm like, why did they bother to spend weeks or months creating this little map room? That makes absolutely no sense. There's no wind. No, it offers nothing. No protection against the elements. It offers no security. It's just
what's the idea of keeping the map hidden from the whole group?
Again, because it moves the plot. That's how they wanted it to move forward. Yeah, it's just, what are these structures? It serves no purpose. It doesn't do anything.
God damn.
This is clearly a movie set. And that's all I have to say about that.
That's fun.
That's all I have to say about that.
Well, before we get into Alex's actual watching for the award season... quick roundtable thoughts, because I mean, we did a fan casting video many years ago. Fantastic Four has a cast now.
Okay,
that it does.
That it does, and it has the face of everything nowadays, and it's a wonderful face. Let's be honest. It's Pedro Pascal.
Pasquale.
We love him
as Mr. Reed Richards, Mr. Fantastic. Vanessa Kirby, I really like as the casting of Sue Storm. I was going to ask Alex, do you want to bring up our old fan cast and see who we did back in the day?
Oh, I guess.
Because I'm very interested to see who the hell we actually did, because those videos did all right back in the day.
No, they didn't.
Yeah, they did. They're one of our, they're some of our biggest videos we have on the whole channel.
The X-Men is, yeah, the X-Men's 10K.
Oh, yeah, X-Men's bigger. Yeah, true. Hmm. Bless. But yeah. And then...
It's Krasinski and Crudup for Mr. Fantastic.
Yep.
Which, was that after we'd actually seen Krasinski as?
That was before.
Mr. Fantastic? Yeah, this is way before. So did we?
This was well before. Did we? This was when it was just, like, a kind of popular fan casting.
Yeah, so we picked that.
This was 4 years ago.
Yeah.
2019.
Who else we got? This might have been before 2019. 2019. We've got Emily Blunt and Kristen Bell as Sue Storm.
Okay, yeah.
We got Zac Efron or Dacre Montgomery for Johnny the Flame Man.
Yep. And instead we just went down to a more recent season of Stranger Things. And we've ended up with Joseph Quinn.
Whatever happened to Zac Efron?
Oh,
he was just
what happened
in
to Zac Efron.
The wrestling movie.
He was just
movie.
In the movie that would break your heart.
A wrestling movie. Okay, I apologize.
You got to watch The Iron Claw, Chris.
Yeah, apparently I do.
It's got the no, you do. It's got good reviews.
Okay,
it's got the guy from The Bear in it. It's got
the Bear Man.
It's got
from
Chef.
Shameless. Yes, Chef
yeah,
guy.
Yeah, yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Shameless Man.
Shameless Man.
Shameless Bear
we
Man.
Chose, we chose... Oh, it's a bit of a sad one to do. We chose Bruce Willis, who can no longer act anymore. Dean Norris as The Thing.
Oh, yeah.
And instead, the actual other bear guy is playing The Thing, his cousin. Cousin.
Yeah, the guy from The Bear.
Mm.
The other
what's
guy
his
from
name?
The Bear.
Richie from The Bear.
Richie, yep.
Now, this casting announcement, I love how they did this. Just dropping a piece of beautiful art as a poster with a great new logo, and it reveals the cast in it. It celebrates Valentine's Day. I loved it. I thought it was so sweet. I saw it because I was on Instagram, and the artist who did the art shared it. And so I saw it on Instagram and I was like, oh, cool, the casting, that's great. Oh, that art's fantastic. I wonder who did that. It was somebody I was already following, which was nice. But I really like what they're doing, going for that 60s vibe. They got Herbie in the corner. It's going to be a bit of fun.
Should be fun. Should be fun.
I hope it's set in the 60s because that would be way more interesting than just another modern day Marvel movie.
Go Marvel.
But yeah.
It's your birthday.
Yeah. Well, I'll just rattle off the bullshit I watched. Where is it? Where's my letterbox? Rewatched The Iron Claw. I watched it with my parents. They thought it was very sad.
Yeah, checks out.
Like everyone else.
I do want to watch it.
Yeah, it'll break your heart.
But they're so fit.
They are extremely jacked. Zac Efron looks like... It just looks like when he moves, he'd have less... Like, it'd be harder for him to move. He's that swole.
Can't wipe his ass.
Walking around like that.
Yeah. But they all got, like, Jeremy Allen White, Bear Man, he's ripped in it too.
Yeah, dude. Well, yeah, because then didn't he go on and do a Calvin Klein thing?
Probably, yeah.
He's got his, like,
Madam Web, whole cock and balls out. Madam Web, we talked about. The Other Guys, we watched The Other Guys Saturday night. We've all seen The Other Guys. We love The Other Guys.
Yep. Peacock, Let Me Fly. Yeah. We all love that movie.
It's peak comedy and peak cinema. It's one of the rare 5s out of 5s for me. It's the greatest comedy.
There's a note here from Dirty Mike and the Boys. Thanks for the F-Shack.
You know what they call it when they do that in there? They call it the soup kitchen. Nasty stuff. Yeah, excellent. Fantastic. You got Michael Keaton, who's the MVP of the film. He's quoting TLC the whole time.
Steve Coogan clearly is in this one also.
Yeah, Steve Coogan's in it. David Urshan. Very funny. It keeps giving them bribes to like Knicks games and musicals, and they don't realize they're being bribed until they're there. I mean, Michael Keaton plays the chief, like the guy in charge of their police unit, who has a second job at Bed Bath & Beyond, which you can clearly tell he enjoys that job so much more. He lives for that job. He's doing a team meeting, and he's just like, all right, everyone, big day out there. We got the news in. The bath mats are in. The new bath mats are in. And he's like, stay alert. It's so good. It's one of the... If anyone hasn't seen it, please watch it. It is so fucking funny. And it oddly has a lot to say about America's financial situation and capitalism. It's got some of the best end credits ever that just explains to you how much more CEOs get paid and how big business in America just gets bailouts and everything.
Mm. Alex, I have not seen this movie and you just sold me on it.
Yeah, it's like the end credits.
You sold me with its anti-capitalism message.
Yeah, at I'm the end, board, it, just, it gives you, it gives you, it gives you a like scale of what CEOs used to earn 50 years ago compared to what they earn now, their ratio to what average employees earn.
Yeah. Rich get richer.
Yeah. And the whole point of the film is just like a big company that goes like technically they fuck themselves over. They lose all their money because of stupid investments, but like they just keep getting bailed out or they try to find, suckers to help bail them out.
Right. Yep. You've sold me on the film now. I'll go watch it.
Yeah. It's so fucking funny. When they're having the fight at the funeral and they're all being quiet, and then once the fight ends and they break out, one of them just goes, "Next time, you, me, library." very fun. Anyway, so that's the old movie I watched. And then I watched The Zone of Interest. Saw it in theaters. I'm this making my rounds.
Incredible poster.
Yeah, great poster. I'm completing my rounds of Best Picture nominees to watch. This is it's actually a British-made film, I realised. I think it's technically German or French because it has been nominated for Best International Picture, but from everything I see, it's British-made.
Hmm.
It's completely spoken in either Polish, German or Yiddish. It is about a family who lives on the other side of the wall of Auschwitz. The father,
famous
of the family,
guy, yeah,
yeah. The father is the it's essentially it's like runs Auschwitz, and we basically get to see day to day lives of Nazis, like around home. Like the sound design in this film is some of the best sound design I've ever heard, because you're just watching these scenes and these scenes are going along and in the background you're just hearing random gunshots.
Oh, God.
Conversations of people being like, oh, he stole an apple. Oh, go drown him in the river. like, yeah, just people screaming, and it's just all in the background. It's subtle, and like you just like you're watching people where it's in there having a conversation at the dinner table. You can just hear it in the background.
That's haunting.
It's really well made. It looks beautiful. It kind of like it's like a history movie that doesn't put that, you know, that work, that 1940s kind of like color grading and sheen on, you know, when you watch those old movies, they try to make it look like you're watching an old movie. Yeah. They made this one look like a modern day movie set in that time.
Yeah.
Normally,
when you get the X-Men effect when it's like, oh, this scene's set back in Auschwitz, so everything's grainy.
Yeah, everything's grainy, or everything's like, you know, got like that green hue.
It's really washed out.
Yeah.
In Schindler's List when they take all the color out altogether.
Yeah. No, they make it look like just like a modern film, and they do it because like they try to limit that separation of you and the movie so much, so like you don't feel like you're watching. It's really powerful, and they do it really well.
It's like when you see like historical photos like retouched and recolored to make it make so you can see it in color, not just in a black and white photo or anything. And it helps it feel so much more real and tangible.
It's not a fun movie. It's not like the other guys. I can understand why people can't connect to the movie, because you don't have a protagonist, or you don't have characters that you're... I mean, they're Nazis. I mean, there's... Like, you get to see this family. Someone brings a bag full of clothes to the house, and they will get told they get to pick one nice piece of clothing that they've taken from the Jewish people. You know, it's stuff like that.
It's not like people can really relate to the situation going on.
There's meetings where they're talking about building the most efficient way for a crematorium, so they can... you know, get through as many Jewish people as they can. They're talking about, these are just like conversations. Day-to-day
conversations.
They, you know, they've got the plans for everything, of the chambers and up. And
yeah.
You never really, I think there's maybe 2 seconds that it's set on the other side of the wall.
So you're pretty much outside of the camp the whole
everything,
time.
You're in this house and you're outside, you're on the other side of the wall. And you just hear it.
Yeah.
And you just follow this family, this husband, this like mainly this wife trying to raise her kids outside of Auschwitz. She loves it. She's built this perfect little home for her family. You know, she's really proud of her garden and everything.
Yeah.
And yeah, like you've got the kids who are counting gold teeth.
Jeez.
It's a lot. They do some really cool cinematic things with it. If you've seen the movie, you know what that means. But if you don't,
that's a good tease.
Yeah. And at first it can feel really random and separate to the film, but then you kind of realize everything, and it's beautiful. It's a really fantastic movie. If you like either history, or you just want to, you know, be sad, I guess.
It seems like the type of film you're going to be in the movie for.
You're not going to cry in the movie.
No, but it's more just like,
yeah.
It doesn't make you feel happy after.
No.
Yeah, it's like the movie's really trying to show that humans did this, not monsters.
Yeah, that's smart.
Like they had scary. As weird as it, they had a life outside of like the roles they played.
Yeah, but except for like the dad who's like in charge of it. Like there's scenes where you can just tell this guy is just consumed by his work.
Yeah.
And like when he's out doing stuff, but he's only thinking about his work, which is the most efficient way to
weird to be like, oh yeah, genocide. This guy's a workaholic, and like, oh yeah, you know,
and you hear other conversations.
He's so focused on his work. But he is also a Jew killing Nazi dude. Is like, oh,
you hear conversations for like one of the characters' mums who comes to visit them, and she talks about, she goes, oh, I wonder if the lady I used to work with is on the other side, or I used to work for, is on the other side of the wall. She's like, they auctioned her belongings off. I really wanted her curtains, but some bitch down the street took it, like, outbid me for her curtains.
Mm. Wow.
So just shit like that. It's
taking that and doing something slice of life. I've never heard of something doing that before.
Yeah.
I guess the closest would maybe be like boy in striped pajamas, maybe.
So it, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I get the thing is German kid's perspective.
Yeah.
Like and, where he doesn't know what's going on. It's just normal family life for him. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's like the closest thing I can kind of think of.
I hear some people complaining about the film because, like, no one really gets their comeuppance in the film, even though we're watching, you know.
Oh, they'll get it.
Nothing. Yeah, and it's just, I'm just like, that's what really happened in real life, though. Like, we're watching them in the time period. I'm like, we know what happens in the end.
Can you imagine if this film ended with suddenly a scene where some Americans burst down the door and start shooting up the family? Like, what does that mean?
Mm.
So yeah, and then the other one I watched, that one ended up making my top 10 of the year. It was really great, and
damn,
yeah, I think it finished fourth. Ended up finishing fourth, nice. Of the year, just after Oppenheimer.
Damn,
which is funny because I was watching it, and the person I was with, I turned, like, we both had the same thought in the movie. We're just thinking, watching this movie, go, you know what? Over in the other side, right, in America right now, Oppenheimer's happening.
This is set side by side.
Yeah, whoa.
So we're just like, cool. Anyway, and then I watched American Fiction, which is another Oscar Best Picture nominated movie. It's about a African-American writer. He mainly writes, like, mythology, and he writes, like, you know, academic books and everything. And, you know, his work just never really gets out there, largely. It's not for, like, popular audiences. And until one day he finds a black author who's written a book that he would consider pandering. It's about the pandering to white people who want to read about the African-American experience.
Yeah.
So, like, they talk in...
In street slang. And...
Yeah, they talk in street... Like, you know, and so he just... As a way, I don't know, it just out of one night out of anger, he decides to write his own pandering book, and, like, expecting everyone to hate it and everyone to realize what he did, and, like, everyone to be like, oh, yeah, this is pandering. This is, like, garbage. We actually don't want this kind of stuff. And instead, it becomes insanely popular. It gets movie rights and, it just becomes the biggest book he's ever written, and it's about him come to terms with, like, you know, putting a fake name on it, and yeah, it's just like a little joke he makes that just goes out of control, and
yeah,
kind of just shows.
That's what I got from the trailer, and I really liked the trailer, so I do want to watch this eventually. It's got the wonderful Jeffrey Wright in it.
Jeffrey Wright's great in it. It's got Sterling K. Brown in it too, who's also excellent.
Oh, nice.
This movie, I gave it 3.5 out of 5. It's so close to having The Source in it, but never, like, you know, it's so close. It's like a millimeter off.
It just needs that one little thing to hook you in.
Yeah. And Sterling K. Brown, he gets us so close.
Ooh.
He carries it. He gets us, like, gets us so close to being there, but we never just get there.
Dang.
I at the end of the day, I was like, probably overall, I thought the movie was really good, but it just didn't have it for me. Mm. And I was tossing up between 4 and 3.5, and I was just like, looked at what else I give it a 4, and the movies that I'd probably rewatch, whereas this one, I'm not sure if I'd rewatch it anytime soon. Mm. But I thought everyone was great in the movie.
I won't take it off my list then. I will still check it out.
It has a pretty creative ending too. Ooh. So that's cool.
Cool.
And I've just been watching Airbender.
Hell yeah.
So.
Bit of Airbender. Yeah. Shout out, new season of Game Changer just started over on Dropout. If people haven't checked out Dropout at all, the artist formerly known as College Humor. Dropout is a wonderful streaming service where they develop all their own shows, and they're so fucking good. And Game Changer season 6 is off to a great start already. The first episode is a game where they have to try and come in second. So they have to always be in the middle of whatever the challenge or prompt is. And it's very fun to watch people try to not come first and try to get things just slightly wrong, but not so wrong that they lose. It's very fun. So, yeah, Game Changer. I highly recommend it. I think they made some more episodes for free on YouTube, so you can just watch them over on there. On
there we go.
The channel formerly known as College Humor. So worth checking out. And I think that about does it for this week. Very excited for next week's episode because this week we have the wonderful Alex heading over to Perth, and we're going to hear all about Elimination Chamber.
Oh, of course.
I'm very excited to hear all about
wrestling.
Oh yeah, I you know what's amazing? I have a friend who has never watched wrestling before, but they love Rhea Ripley. Which is fair enough.
How does that work?
They follow her on Instagram.
Oh.
Because, you know, look at her. So this friend of mine, she was like
8:30 Adelaide time PM.
Yeah. She messaged me and she was like, "Hey, watch party." And I was like, "Have you ever watched wrestling before?" And she was like, "No." And I was like, "Oh God, okay, I'm going to have to explain a lot."
I found out which talent are going to be at the press junket.
Ooh.
It's subject to change though. So
Okay.
They've said Rhea Ripley, yes. Grayson Waller, Becky Lynch, Seth Rollins, Bianca Belair, Tiffany Stratton, Nia Jax, and Kevin Owens.
Yo.
Okay.
There's some big names in there.
I know. It's Seth freaking Rollins, by the way.
Yeah, I was gonna say. Gosh.
So yeah, that'd be exciting. We've only got 4 matches though.
Really? Is it just the 4?
It's 4 matches and a Grayson Waller effect with Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins.
Okay. Oh, that'll be fun though.
So yeah. So it's gonna be interesting. But the men's Elimination Chamber match is stacked.
Yeah, that thing is. Oh my God.
It's LA Knight, Kevin Owens, Logan Paul, Randy Orton, Bobby Lashley, and Drew McIntyre.
Great. Oh my God. Everything Drew McIntyre is doing lately is fantastic. I'm so here for it.
And then there's the women's is Bianca Belair, Becky Lynch, Tiffany Stratton, Raquel Rodriguez, Naomi, and Liv Morgan.
Yep. That'll be good.
It'll be interesting.
And then obviously Rhea versus Nia Jax, then Judgment Day versus Pete Dunne and Tyler Bate.
Yeah. It'll be
all right.
Very fun. I'm excited I'm mainly just excited to hear about your fun adventure over there. And I hope get some photos Thursday and night. Stuff. It'll be fun.
I got a big day of press on Friday, Undertaker show Friday night.
Hell yeah.
I'm
excited to hear about
Saturday.
That.
And the event on Saturday, and I got to hit up the Superstore while I'm there too.
Fuck yeah.
So, awesome. And not pay $25 for shipping.
Hell yeah. Oh, do they have do they know what there's going to be? Should I see if I want to send you any money? Buy me a shirt or something.
You can look at the shirts online.
All right, I'll have a look, and if I see anything I like, I'll let you know.
Yeah.
Cheeky.
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you for joining us for episode 236 MMT Millennium Movie Talk Movie TV Show Wrestling Podcast. Not so much wrestling. I mean, next week we'll make up for it, but we'll get there. Chris can
Chris
have a nice
like,
snooze.
Okay, next week, Chris is like, I can do stuff on a Tuesday night next week because they're not going to need me.
Yeah, honestly.
Or you can watch Elimination Chamber, Chris.
Chris, you should watch Elimination Chamber.
Maybe I can watch the wrestling movie during the podcast.
During.
Yeah.
Okay.
You can see my reaction.
That would also be good.
Can we see your reaction? We'll do a 2-hour episode. We'll just wait for Chris to get to the end and just be in tears.
Oh, boy. That would be the weirdest watch along ever. Follow us on your podcast service of choice. Leave a review if you can. Like on YouTube, subscribe, follow, all that jazz. And as always,
I'm Alex.
I'm Braden.
I'm Christian.
And I'm Michael.
And we're out of here. Goodbye, you filthy animals. And now we click broadcast. And who's doing the intro?
I got it.
Brayden's got the intro. Go. Go Teen Titans. Go Teen Titans. Is that the song?
Oh, Teen Titans, you're rolling down the field. Oh, bad. Teen Titans. Oh, Teen Titans. It's Grace.
Titans. Yeah, mate. Oh, Grace. Brayden, get in there.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 236 of MMT Millennial Movie Talk.